Good morning. So my name's Paul Pearce, and I work at DSTL. Tom Halliday, my colleague here, is going to help me and hopefully try and explain something that we've found quite useful over the last few years, something called an evidence framework, that as part of a wargaming process can help us make some sort of judgment about evidence quality and fitness for purpose in terms of decision support. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the theory. Tom's going to talk about some application. And first of all, I've just got to give you a little bit of a history about some evidence issues that UK MOD in particular has experienced over the years, just to put this in context. There have been various sort of inquiries and sort of reviews over the years. First one really started with what's called the 2011 Defence Reform Report, Lord Levine's report, that raised a whole series of issues around evidence used to inform and support decision making. We then had what was called the McPherson Review in 2013, that was a review of the use of government analytical models following an issue with letting of a rail franchise in the UK. That resulted in a cross-government group that came together to produce what was called the ACQUA book, the Analytical Quality Assurance book, in 2015. And that produced a whole series of guidance on evidence and how we should be approaching modelling and simulation, of which wargaming fits in there. And most recently we've had the Iraq inquiry, so Chilcot's 2016 report, that raised a whole series of issues around evidence to inform decision making and so on. And in particular, a couple of things out of that were really about the issues of how you communicate uncertainty around information and evidence being used to inform decisions. And as well, the way in which we think about how we measure some of these activities we're doing, the measures of merit that we may use to inform decisions. So I'm just going to sort of draw some of those threads together and explain how this thing called the evidence framework can potentially assist. So when I'm talking about fitness for purpose here, I'm talking about fitness for purpose in the context of my background as an operational analyst in looking at supporting evidence-based decisions and supporting executive decision makers that want to make evidence-based decisions. So how can we assist them in doing that, bearing in mind all those other evidential issues that have been raised by those different reviews? So the evidence framework I'm going to hopefully show you is a way in which you can step back and take a reflexive stance on what you're doing to critique your analytical approach, your wargame approach, as part of assisting in making that sort of judgment about fitness for purpose. Why does it matter? Actually, in the session this morning, we heard something about ethics, but all UK MOD analysts and civil servants have to adhere to the Universal Ethical Code. And in particular, we have to think about aspects of rigour, respect and responsibility in what we do as MOD scientists. The evidence framework, what I'm going to hopefully demonstrate to you, is that can play a part in MOD scientists thinking about some of these ethical issues. It matters because ultimately the things that we're informing, the decisions we're informing, may involve in millions of pounds worth of investment, or they may end up, you know, ultimately affecting people's lives. And if anything, that the Chilcot thing shows me that people would like to be held accountable for the sorts of evidence and decisions that they help to support. So we need to be aware of that. So Colin's already put up something to do with the stages of wargaming. But at what stage, really, do we really think about the evidence requirement? So, you know, sponsors come along, we're going to run a war game, run an analysis activity, where we really think about these evidence requirements. There aren't any sort of specific guidance around how you hold conversations with people to specifically think about how much evidence is enough to inform the decision that you want to make. We may touch on that when we think about the aims and objectives, for example, the research question we may be setting. But evidence requirements should be looked at across all of those different stages, and Colin has illuminated, not just when we think about the data capture and analysis. So I'm going to hopefully show you how you can think about those evidence requirements throughout all those stages. So thinking about fitness for purpose, so how can we think about fitness for purpose for a war game? Well, there may be, you know, a range of different options and solutions out there you can think about. The one I'm going to talk about here is applying this thing called the evidence framework. The thing I'm going to talk about are three simple tables that we use. So the blue table is what we call an evidence profile table that I'll explain in a bit of detail. The sort of orange salmon coloured one on there is what we call the validation profile table. and then the assessment of both those come together in the last thing, what we call a confidence assessment table. So three relatively simple mechanisms by which we can start to step back and reflect on the processes, the mechanics, the analysis that we're doing to inform decisions. Okay, so the evidence profile table. A few things to put out here. So we've got five key criteria within this table. These are things that we've generally characterised as being useful reminders of what it means to think about evidence quality in this particular context. So we can think about the comprehensiveness of what we're trying to achieve within our study, how many of the factors of relevance we're covering, for example. We've also got issues to do with relevance, so as you're pulling material and data together, how relevant is that for the issue you're looking at? The extent to which we maybe opened up our war game or our insights from the war game to challenge. Issues around what we call quantity in this thing, so this is very much what Neil Verrill was talking about this morning, mixed methods approach, or how much of a track record you may have with a certain type of game that you're bringing to bear. Veracity, saying something about the supportability of what we're finding to possibly make statements about cause and effect if we can. So what we have within this table under each of those categories are a bunch of statements at a different number of levels. So as a group of analysts, as a plenary group, we would sit together and think about how a war game may be supporting the purpose that we're actually trying to put it towards, by trying to make assessments under those different headings, using those different statements to guide us as to where we may sit on a profile level. So you've got the profiles on the right there that run from 1 to 4. You simply, and I'll show you an example in a moment, pick a set of statements you think is appropriate to the assessment you've done, simply tot up the values you get, and then you read off along the bottom to give you a rule of thumb around what we can say about evidence warrant, we call it. So that range from weak, moderate, strong, to something called proof or beyond reasonable doubt. So these are about generating rules of thumb around different assertions or hypotheses that we're making. And there's a similar thing on the validation profile table. So this is getting at issues to do with validity. So here we're looking at things to do with face validity. Does it pass the initial do I believe it test, let's say. Criterion validity here, when we think about the things that we're measuring and the proxies we may be using to actually determine fit for purpose, for example. The construct, we may be thinking about mechanics and processes. And we've got the content about the extent to which you might sort of think there's sufficient support to underpin your assertion. So in a similar way, you go through a process with a series of sort of sessions with people to pick the sorts of statements that best characterise each of those criteria. And again, you tot up the scores and you read off along the bottom to give you a rule of thumb around validity. So again, we've got weak, moderate, strong and high validity in this context here. So that's what we call the validation profile table. How might I use these sorts of things? So you can actually use these sorts of tables to have initial discussions with customers around evidence requirements. So this would attempt to avoid things like gold plating. So do we actually need a war game? Do we need something different? Back to those sorts of things. You can for certain use it to assess the findings from war games, and we've used this on a number of occasions to look and assess insights that come from our games as we report that to customers. And as we're pitching here, as Tom will show, we can use it to perhaps assess what models or war games can actually do in terms of underpinning supporting customer decisions. So actually trying to give some indication on the limits of findings you may get under certain categories of your particular games. And after action assessment, again, to just take that reflexive stance on the analysis that's been put together to inform decision making. So there's a number of things we can do. You're not going to read that. I'm not going to dwell on this long. These are the statements that appear under those things. So you will go through a process, as analysts, you've stepped through a process in a plenary session to go through each of those sets of statements and then make a judgment of where you sit within there. There's a simpler version that gives the hooks once you get used to doing that you can use as a quick reminder. But essentially, you've got the same within the validation profile table, a series of detailed statements, and then a series of simple statements that act as those hooks. Right, so let's give you a quick example. So this is not specifically on the war game context here, so let's say someone's run a study that's looking at procurement of a new anti-tank guided missile system that I've called Slinger here, And what we got here is in yellow is a conclusion or an insight that's being drawn around the effectiveness of that particular capability. So how might we use something like the evidence framework to assess and actually provide some sort of communication of the evidence around that? So what we do in this example is that you would pick the appropriate statements you think characterise their assertion. So say you would do this as a plenary session with various people from different disciplines coming in to provide question, answer, challenge, so that sort of thing. And as a group, you would come up with a consensus around where you think that fits. And that's generating this rule of thumb. You then simply say, tot up that. So here we've got a moderate warrant in terms of that assertion. So this is talking about the quality of the evidence to underpin that assertion based on what we were able to do within the time scale, the resources that we had for that particular event that delivered that insight. You do a similar thing on the validation profile table. So again, you have that challenge, that discussion to pick a series of statements that puts you somewhere on a validity scale here. I can't see where I've marked that on this thing. So again, you come up, I think we've got a moderate warrant on that particular assessment there. The thing that does over and above just doing an evaluation and coming up with a score of an axis is the richness of the conversations that are produced as a result of going through that process are equally just as important and are very, very useful to capture. And I've seen a number of people that come from a range of different disciplines into those sessions that go away with slightly different views about, say for example, how some of their data was used that provided input to some of those games as well. So that the process itself can be sort of quite cathartic for people as well. You simply then just plot on the X and Y axis to give you a rough rule of thumb around what you can talk about confidence. So here we can say we've got moderate warrant in the evidence to support that assertion, moderate validity, which is leading us to medium confidence in that assertion being made. So effectively here we'd be talking about sort of further analysis may change the findings. So you're starting to think about how you can communicate uncertainty on here. Note the grey scale on this is deliberately trying to avoid things to do with red, amber, green scales, to avoid people thinking about these things being good or bad. It's just about the fitness of purpose of the evidence or the game to inform a decision. Another quick example again where someone, we may come together and have a conversation around a particular game that I may have, that someone wants to come and say, is your game actually any good for doing a cyber study that I might want to do? Well, again, we can use this approach, have a conversation around some of those aspects. So again, you might in that conversation come up with a series of sort of assertions or statements that you think are relevant to that discussion and generate a score on the warrant scale and generate a validity score. And then conversely generate an assessment of how confident you may be in your game to underpin or support an activity to do with analysis and cyber. If the customer is only interested in evidence at that level, then that might be good enough. That might be fit for purpose to inform that decision. So in that context, you're avoiding this aspect of gold plating anyway. Okay, so that's me. You've had theory and a little bit of application in the past. Tom's now going to come up and talk about a particular application that we've applied this to.
Right, thank you, Paul. Good morning, everyone. I'm Tom Halliday. I'm the software model custodian for Combat Mission, which is one of the models that we use now in DSTL. So first of all, just a quick thing on what is Combat Mission. You actually go to see it this evening in the second game session. We're over in the McAdam building, which is over there across that ramp thing and up those stairs, hidden away in a corner. So if you want to come and actually have a look at it, you're more than welcome to. It is, I believe, fully booked in terms of playing, but we're happy to have as many people as want to come and have a look at it. Ready, I'm not going to do that. This is a commercially available game. You can get it from battlefront.com. They're the developers. You can see the website right there. You can go and buy this game right now if you wanted to. It's published by Slytherin. Slytherin are at Connections. You can go and find some of them. I believe they are involved tomorrow in the automation things. So I would please recommend you talking to anyone from Slytherin. I'm sure they'll be more than happy to talk to you about. Yes, so Ian is sat right down at the front. They will be more than happy to talk about this kind of thing with you. So it is a 3D tactical land close combat model. And we mean close combat in this sense, as in like direct fire, not guys with swords fighting each other, anything like that. It is very much a war game, not a model. We use the term probably interchangeably. It's, you know, player driven at its core. It's a turn-based game, but unlike most turn-based games where, you know, I'll take a turn, then Paul will take a turn, It's what we call a Wego game. I'm sure some people will be familiar with that. I will plan all my orders, Paul will plan all of his orders, we'll hit go, and in combat missions 60 seconds of time will play out that you can't interact with. So it's a game that, whilst it is turn-based and that gives us the control that we look for, it's building in that kind of lack of control that you actually have in real life, that you can't just react to everything all the time like God, basically. Unfortunately, war doesn't work that way, well, or fortunately in some cases. So we've been looking in DSTL at commercial games for a variety of reasons. Essentially, we're looking to fill a gap between our very good high-end models that are expensive to run, but that we have like complete confidence in, essentially, and then the kind of lower end, or not the lower end, but the kind of manual games which are slightly easier to run, they're interactive, they're all about drawing insights out of people, and we're trying to look at that middle gap where we need a kind of cost-effective solution to really rapid wargaming that is actually really hard to do. So our models take a long time to spin up, they're expensive to use, they give you really good outputs, but sometimes that's not necessarily what you want. You don't necessarily need the highest quality evidence in the world. You just want, you know, something that's kind of a rough guess, not guess, rough estimate of something that's relatively accurate. And this, again, is what the evidence framework is all about. It's about us being able to tell people, if you use combat mission, you're not going to get as high a warrant as you would if you used one of our internal models, one of our proper models. But it might be good enough. It might be exactly what you're after. It's going to be cheaper, it's going to be faster. Is that good enough, basically? So we ran a number of tests on the game at the tail end of last year. So just to look at what we could about a closed system, essentially. The game is a black box system currently. If you bought it yourself, you wouldn't necessarily see, you wouldn't see the data, you wouldn't see the algorithms. So we ran a series of war games to just look at what we could about the behavior. And it's quite nice in combat mission compared to other games because it's fully 3D and because you can see all the tanks driving around, people walking around, that kind of thing. It's actually really easy to draw things out of that. If it was just counter A fires a counter B and counter B explodes, you have absolutely no idea what the hell's happened there. But if you can see, you know, a tank drives up around a corner, takes aim and fires, and it destroys the other tank, perfect, yeah, good enough. So the way we applied the evidence framework, we ran a workshop with various stakeholders, so both people familiar with combat mission, but also people that aren't that familiar with combat mission, because it's important to get that kind of diversity of thinking within these groups, that you don't want just people who are going to be like, oh yeah, it does that, yeah, it does that, great, amazing. You want people from other models who are experienced with other ways that you can do this, that can say, so we had examples, you know, where we might score something quite low on the, quite poorly on the evidence framework, and then someone else would say, well, actually, no model can do that well, so you're kind of being a bit harsh there. Even though they're not familiar with the model, they're familiar with other models, they're familiar with the way the evidence framework works. And it gives you a nice balance, I guess, of people when you're going through it. Because it's really about the discussion that you're having. It's about drawing out why you're putting those numbers on it. The numbers are nice for a kind of conclusion thing that you can present to people, as we'll see. But really, you're kind of trying to understand the model and gain an understanding of where it is valuable and where it's not valuable. So we went through a number of functional areas. So some examples of maneuver, close combat, engineers, fires, that kind of thing. So all the kind of, we just have a big long list, and you just go through them one at a time, say, does it do this well, in all these different sort of big tables, the big charts, go through all the charts, all of those different aspects, scoring them appropriately to try and give a kind of an idea when someone comes to us, when a customer comes to us and says, can I do this, we can say, the number suggests no, or yes. We also put an overall score together for combat mission as a whole, but we're kind of not super sure about the utility of that because it's very much it's very, very dependent on what you're trying to get out of it. Like that score, I think it's like a 25 or something like that. It's a kind of a moderate score, or kind of moderate to low score. But if you're using it for certain specific situations, it becomes a lot stronger. And if you're using it for certain other specific situations, it becomes a lot weaker. So putting overall scores on things is, we think, less useful than actually going in identifying these different aspects that you're going to be looking at, or potentially going to be looking at, and applying it to that. And the scores are putting limits on the quality of insight. So obviously Paul just explained a lot of this, that we're, when you draw conclusions from the tool, it's not about, they're not necessarily about saying you shouldn't use the tool for this, or you should use it for this always. It's more about saying, if you use it for this, you're going to get evidence that is going to be this good, basically, or that we can't guarantee is any better than this. Because you might get evidence out of it that's 100% accurate, but that we have given like a low confidence to, because we're not sure that it's 100% accurate, because we can't prove that. It's all about, again, it's all about risk mitigation, right? So this is the first time we really looked at using the evidence framework to assess a model like this. So normally it will be applied afterwards to conclusions and things like that. Whereas this time we try to kind of preempt it so that we can assess the model beforehand and really illustrate, help give our customers an idea of what's, particularly for a new model that is external to DSTL, give an idea of what they might use it for. So they might come to us and say, oh, we've had this project coming up, we really want to use it, and rather than just saying, no, it's not appropriate, we can say, we think it's not going to be giving you a particularly high warrant out of your evidence. And again, that might, it's up for them to decide at that point, is that good enough? So we have a quick blaze through this example. So here we have different scenario scales that you might apply combat mission at, so section scale, platoons, company, battle groups. If anyone not familiar with the military, sections are like 10 people, platoons are 3 sections usually, companies are 3 platoons, battle groups are 3 companies, easy enough. So we went through each stage and we'll just pull out some interesting points. So if you first look at the combined score at the far right, we'll start at the end. The lower the number, the better the confidence we have. So you can see that we're most confident in combat mission at a company level. We're still pretty confident in it at battle group, it's still pretty good at platoon, but if you go into the section level, we're much less confident in it. And if we then look in the detail, you can see why. So the comprehensiveness, the lack of understanding of the data is really affecting how much we can draw out of the section things. So because they don't necessarily act in a way that is necessarily super realistic, or can't tell why, then we can draw, or we can't say this conclusion, this is going to be a high warrant. You will notice that a lot of the values are the same. That's because our method of evaluating it was the same for all of these things. Generally speaking, that will always be the case for something like combat mission. That is not always true for a lot of other things, though. If we move on to the kind of validation score, so face, which is, you know, how does the game look if you showed it to someone? Would they kind of understand it and go, yeah, that looks credible to me? Again, section level, no, it doesn't. Like, we've had a lot of pushback from the military on, why is he moving like that? That's not a real formation. This is blah, 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 blah. And again, because platoons are looking quite directly at sections and the way the sections work still, also has a low score, or a high score, I should say. But when you kind of scale it up past the point where you're really focusing on those sections, the actual way the sections interact and act is absolutely fine. It works, or it seems credible. The problem is when you kind of dive in on what exactly is happening down there. So when you view it up in the aggregate, pretty credible. So therefore, we're much more confident in saying the company and battle group outputs you probably are going to be fine with. And then content, finally. So this is really, again, still harping on this section thing, there's a point drawing out why the section thing is less confident, because you have a lack of control. When you're doing a section level study, you're going to want to be able to move the individual guys around, fundamentally speaking, almost certainly, 99% of the time. Unfortunately, you can't do that, that's fine, but it just means that you're never going to get a particularly high score in the section level because you can't control the sections. But again, you push it up to company and battle group, you're looking at moving these sections around really as platoons at least, and then it's much less of a problem that you have a lack of control over the sections, because then you'd be tying yourself down in detail that you don't need. When you're pushing up that high, these high level concerns, particularly around things like C2 are very good, so command and control, so modeling of those aspects are really effective. So just finally, if we then plot these on the confidence assessment table, you can see that if we were going to do a section structure or something about sections, if we were going to look at sections, we would tell our customers our confidence in whatever evidence you pull out of this is going to be low. So we probably recommend you don't use it. Most of the time we recommend not to use combat mission. We have other tools that do it better. There are other methods that we can use to get you a higher level of confidence in your outputs. On the company side though, we're going to say, it's approximately a medium confidence in any outputs that you put out. So we're happy, probably, for you to do some kind of study looking at company level. Okay? So hopefully that's super simple, super brief look at how we applied this to combat mission and then how we might use that with our customers.
So quickly to summarise then, so just want to leave you with a thought. So the evidence frame is not about assessing sort of how good or bad the game is, it's about assessing the quality of the evidence that may come out of that game, and it's all about what is appropriate to inform a decision as well. And if you think about it as well, about the ability just to sort of use it as a mechanism to step back and take a reflexive stance across everything you're doing. So almost think about what Neil said this morning about that experimental thought process. It's just a means of actually formalising some structured thinking around that. And hopefully, you know, with what we've shown here, you can see it addresses an awful lot of the evidence issues that we've highlighted before. There is a whole lot of further reading, so if you really want to read about the UK Mod Evidence Report, there's some links there. And also on the website, there's an annex that goes through in detail the slinger example that I've given as well. So it takes you through each of the stages of that assessment.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Tom. To give a round of applause.